Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. The news from Hurricane Florence and its destructive impact in North Carolina continues to emerge, and very little of it is good. Not only have 39 deaths been directly attributed to the storm, but the environmental impacts can only be described as massive. The storm itself and the floods that came in its wake have ruined thousands of structures, killed countless animals, inundated scores of toxic waste sites, including hog lagoons and coal ash basins, and sent torrents of debris and poisons into our rivers, lakes, sounds, and the ocean itself. To get a sense of the destruction and the steps state policymakers should be taking to speed recovery and prepare for future storms, I sat down this week with one of the state's most knowledgeable and experienced environmental policy experts, Grady McCauley of the North Carolina Conservation Network. Well, Grady McCauley, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for being back with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this is an amazing time for the environment in our state, a sort of worrisome time in the aftermath of Hurricane Florence. I guess in some sense, it's another warning shot for our state to start getting prepared for these kind of things. But do you have any sort of overall take on what happened and where we need to go?
First, I want to say our hearts go out to people who have suffered losses in this hurricane. It's going to be a long process of rebuilding individual lives and communities. When we look at what the state's role is in that, there's a bunch of ways that North Carolina can make this process work better. There's still a response going on, and there's still a chance to prevent some of the harms that are slowly unfolding. So on the response side, for example, there is debris, wood from docks, from structures all over North Carolina's coastline. A lot of that is pressure-treated lumber, which should not be burned. And there's a temptation, I think, for folks to try and get rid of it by burning it. But it's got arsenic in it, and it needs to be disposed of properly. So there's some things like that where the harms haven't happened yet, and they can be prevented with action, with money.
Sense.
Right.
Paying attention to what we're doing.
That response is going to continue for a while. We need to get the debris cleaned up. But then when we start looking at recovery, there are three broad themes for environmental groups. Environmental groups have over 40 different specific recommendations of ways to make a stronger recovery. But there are three broad themes. One of them is we need to get properties that have been repeatedly flooded, putting people's lives and property at risk, and pollution sources out of the floodplain. I'll come back and talk a little bit more about that. We also, for the long term, need to restore our floodplains and manage them so that we don't put people in harm's way in the future. And then the last piece is, when you're saying Florence is kind of a wake-up call, we really need to think about how to build resiliently for the future so that future storms don't harm us this way.
That's something I think we hear that term floodplain, but I'll bet you the average listener, the average North Carolinian, probably hasn't really thought about what that means. We're talking about parts of our state that are just susceptible to this, and it's just silly and foolish, ultimately, to allow permanent human habitation. Right.
Right. So the way folks who work in this area generally talk about the floodplain, meaning the 100-year floodplain, which is the storm that has about a 1%, the area that would be flooded about 1% chance a year,
1% chance.
Now, both Florence and Matthew were what are called 500-year plus storms, which means that there's about a 0.2% chance that you'd expect them to happen in a given year. What's significant about that is we've now had two of those in 3 years. And Floyd was one, and that's within a third within 20 years. It's possible statistically that they still could be 500-year storms. It's much more likely that our calculations are just wrong. And this goes to the resilience point, is that we really need to know what the best science can tell us. It may be that that number was always wrong. It certainly is changing as a result of climate change. We see that with smaller storms that are getting more intense, and it may be the large ones, too, getting more intense or more frequent. We need to know if what we've been calling a 500-year storm is actually something we can expect to see every 10, 15, 20 years. And if that's the case, way broader than just environmental issues, we need to think about what that means for infrastructure investments, for what a strong and viable economy for Eastern North Carolina looks like, if we're going to get catastrophic flooding every 15 to 20 years. Obviously, it's home for a lot of people. We can still live there. We can still have a strong economy, but we have to think about what that looks like. When we talk about getting pollution sources out of the floodplain, we're really talking about that 100-year floodplain. We really need to get people whose property is flooding over and over again out. That needs to be coupled with investments in affordable housing, because if you think about it, a lot of the places that are affordable are in the floodplain. And you can't just buy their homes if they're renting or if they own. You can't just buy it unless you also have a place for people to go and some policy to get there. There are also a bunch of uses, industrial uses or pollution sources that really shouldn't be in the 100-year floodplain. After Floyd, we had a voluntary buyout program for a lot of hog farms in the floodplain. But there are still dozens of hog farms that are in the 100-year floodplain. And so it's not surprising that when we get catastrophic flooding like this, some of the lagoons, not a lot, but some lagoons breach, many more of them overtop, and the waste in them mixes with the floodwaters and can get carried across the landscape.
And hog farms, these animal feeding operations, industrial hog farms, are not the only kinds of problematic places that lie in the path of these storms. We also have just toxic waste sites and even coal ash.
You know, before Floyd, so this is nearly 20 years ago, we had a lot of junkyards in the floodplain, and we bought those out, and we said those couldn't be in the floodplain anymore. And that's really worked, because you don't hear about that in floods like this. You don't hear about that kind of damage. We haven't done that with other sources of pollution. One that we really need to address are poultry farms, confined poultry farms. We had something like 5 million chickens at least die in Florence, and they have large piles of manure. Those facilities are essentially unregulated in North Carolina, unlike swine farms, which do have permits. So this is just a gap. The state doesn't even know where a lot of those poultry farms are, and that's a gap that really should be corrected.
This speaks to the whole issue, I guess, of environmental regulation and the resiliency and the strength of our environmental regulators in the state. Obviously, over the last several years, we've seen significant efforts to reduce the staffing, the funding for environmental protection in the state. This is about supposedly making North Carolina open for business and unleashing the private sector. But unfortunately, what it's also unleashed is a lot of environmental problems that might have been preventable. Do you think there's any hope that this is dawning on our state lawmakers and that perhaps we could see a turnaround in some of these policies?
Well, Florence should really bring that home. I mean, folks will probably recall that during the last session, one of the major environmental issues in the last legislative session was what to do about Gen X pollution, one of these chemicals that's in a class of perfluorinated compounds. Gen X is specifically in the Cape Fear, but the broader class is in other rivers in the state. And the Department of Environmental Quality asked the legislature for resources to get on top of that problem more, and the legislature didn't give it to the agency. Now, that was specifically around that issue of Gen X and perfluorinated compounds, but we've been seeing these cuts for a number of years now, and you can see the effect when you look at the response to Florence. The regional offices were just, I mean, some of them were flooded, but they just didn't have the extra resources to get out there quickly. So you had environmental advocates getting out to sites much faster than the department could.
Just volunteers.
Or professional environmental advocates like
right.
the riverkeepers going
right,
out and testing
right.
water.
Not public employees.
No, that's right. Not representing the state. And we need state agencies that are resourced enough to be quickly responsive, but over the longer term also to be addressing the issues that are a threat to health and welfare across the state.
We've alluded to the coal ash issue, and that's clearly one that doesn't just affect eastern North Carolina or places that have been inundated by hurricanes and floods. It's all across our state. That continues to be a point of contention. We had at least one, I'm aware of, coal ash basin that overflowed as a result of Florence near Goldsboro, but this continues to be a worry. Duke Energy takes the position that we don't need to excavate these coal ash basins as is being done in some other places. You think, I gather, that maybe that's not an adequate response.
That's right. Duke Energy has 14 different sites. There's multiple pits in some sites. They're unlined. They leach heavy metals and other contaminants into groundwater around them. Most of them are near water, surface water, and so it also leaches into the surface water. And our consistent ask has been to take these coal ash pits, take the coal ash out of them and put them in lined landfills away from water, which would also help prevent losses during floods. So we saw at the Lee plant water actually coming over where the coal ash sites are, and at the Sutton plant near Wilmington, a dam actually breaching into a lake there. Some of the test results have still to come back. Riverkeepers were looking at the Lee plant and finding high concentrations of arsenic. State regulators checking them 4 days later didn't, but it's possible that the stuff is on the bottom. It's heavy. It's possible it's sunk down to the bottom of the river now. And could be harming the life that lives in the bottom of the river. So the basic message on these is we've got to get these ash pits away from our waterways and into lined landfills where they won't pollute the groundwater.
I've heard a lot of people say, you know, North Carolina's used to doing hurricanes. We've had a lot of these hurricanes. Hurricane Hazel, my gosh, in 1954 was terrible, and we're good at responding to these storms, which there's some truth to that. I looked at the numbers, though. In 1954, when Hurricane Hazel hit, there were 4 million people living in North
That's
Carolina.
Right.
Much of eastern North Carolina, even the coastal communities, the beaches were very sparsely populated. Now we're more than 10 million. We continue to grow fast. We're using up more and more. What used to be open land is paved over. It's now been developed. Aren't we reaching a point where we're really going to have to get serious about how we're going to have a sustainable economy, a sustainable state with such a fast-growing population? It just seems to me that we're facing a crisis if we don't get serious about planning for the next century.
Yes, that's right. And I'll say two things on that. One is a lot of the discussion up until now has been around what do you do to manage the smaller floods that happen more often? And we clearly could grow a lot better. We can manage our land a lot better. We can get problems out of the floodplain, the 100-year floodplain, so they don't flood regularly. I think what Florence signals is it may be that we should be expecting catastrophic flooding every 15 years, every 20 years, maybe more frequently. We need to know the science on that, but then we also need to tailor our policies because that's flooding way outside the 100-year floodplain. So it's good to have the policies that keep people out of harm's way every year, every couple or 3 years. But we also need to think about what it means to live with a vibrant economy and healthy landscape if we are expecting flooding of this scale every 15 to 20 years.
It's not just flooding either. It's the air pollution. It's all of the impacts of having so many people, so many vehicles, so much consumption of carbon fuels in this fast-growing state. I would assume that's going to strain our environmental resources as well.
That's right. There's an interesting nexus there is obviously on that larger picture, one of the most important things we can do is shift our energy generation to renewable energy sources away from fossil fuels. But in the context of the hurricane, one of the interesting sort of side lessons from the hurricane is that when the hurricane came, the natural gas plants had to shut down, some of them. The nuclear plant down by Wilmington shut down. Solar and wind came through very quickly, very resilient in the aftermath of the hurricane. So that's an example of, that's both an example of if we shift towards renewables, we build towards resilience. We also improve the economy in that the fuel source for solar and wind is what's right there. So a bigger part of the money is coming back into the community, staying in the community, as opposed to, for example, paying for gas from elsewhere. These things can work together in positive reinforcing ways.
Wow, I'm glad we were able to end it on a happier note on this discussion. Thanks for updating us. We'll have lots to talk about, I'm sure, in the very near future. Keep up the good work.
Grady
McCallie,
so
the North Carolina Conservation Network. Thanks very much.
Take care.
Up next, one of North Carolina's top political scientists gives us her take on the Kavanaugh nomination fight and what it might mean for the fall election.